Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. This is Keeping the Faith. Welcome to the program. Steve is out of town this weekend, and I'm filling in. My name is Don Nolan. I fill on a regular basis for Steve. And we today are privileged to have two guests with us, Mr. Greg Damhorst and Ishmael Umer, to talk to us about a new initiative that has essentially come out of the White House, but in many ways is rooted in other interfaith activities that have been going on around the country and also here at the University of Illinois related to interfaith dialogue. Greg and Ishmael, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
The program that we're going to be talking about has a shortened name called Interfaith Service Challenge. And as I understand it, this was announced by President Obama back in March. And he said, in effect, quote, "For over 200 years, Americans of all faith have come together, put their shoulders to the wheel of history, and made this country what it is today. And I know that as we go forward, it's going to take all of us, Christian and Jew, Hindu and Muslim, believer and non-believer, to meet the challenges of the 21st century." He made this statement in a video interview as a background purpose or motive for Interfaith Service Challenge. So, Greg, why don't we start with you? Just exactly what is this initiative and how did you get involved?
Sure. The Illinois Interfaith Service Challenge is an initiative that seeks to bring students from many different religious and non-religious backgrounds together to engage in service, specifically service around issues of homelessness and hunger in our community, and also to integrate a dialogue about faith, traditions, values, and identity in that service process.
Mm-hmm. Ishmael, how did you get involved?
I actually came from it from a bit of a different perspective. I didn't come from it from an interfaith perspective. I'm involved in an organization on campus called Volunteer Alignment Project, a service organization, and we were approached saying there's this challenge that's being responded to by our campus, and they want to promote interfaith dialogue through service. So I came at it from a service perspective, but after learning about the initiative, I learned a little bit more about the value of interfaith dialogue, and I thought, well, we do great service work here at the U of I campus already, and this is a great interfaith dialogue is a great thing, and I think the opportunity to promote that through service is going to be absolutely fantastic.
People off campus, welcome to be involved?
Absolutely. We're looking for involvement in the entire community, and obviously a big part of that is the students, but the very nature of service involves giving back to the community at large, not just the college community, so definitely.
Most of the students are gone now, right?
Most of them are, but this entire summer we've been hard at work preparing for it.
Let's hope they're listening into this podcast tonight as well as
so.
The local community. Well, this is a call-in program, in case you don't know. If you would like to talk to our guests, Greg Damhorst and Ishmael Umer, about Interfaith Service Challenge and this program recently announced by the White House, you can call in locally at 333-9455, or you can also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Well, the University of Illinois has been involved in interfaith activities for quite a while. Greg, you mentioned Eboo Patel to me before the program. Who is Eboo Patel and what kind of projects have been going on before Interfaith Service Challenge came into being?
Eboo Patel is an alum of the University of Illinois. He does his undergraduate work here in the Urbana-Champaign campus. A lot of his experience here is documented in a book that he wrote called Acts of Faith. He went on from this campus to do a Rhodes Scholarship in, I think it was Oxford.
Yeah, Oxford University. I think it was a PhD in sociology.
That's right, yeah, his PhD in the sociology of religion. And sort of out of his experiences, both in his
academic education as well as his own personal spiritual experiences. He founded an organization called the Interfaith Youth Corps, which is headquartered in Chicago. And that organization has influenced a lot of the local interfaith work that we've done here in Champaign-Urbana, primarily with an organization called Interfaith in Action, which is a registered student organization on campus.
And how did Interfaith Service Challenge grow out of this work? I understand Mr. Patel, Professor Patel, right? Is he teaching?
Dr. Patel.
Was involved in this in some way in Washington.
That's right. So IBU served on the president's advisory council for faith-based and neighborhood partnerships, I believe for 2 years, which is a collection of faith and community leaders to advise the president on issues of faith and neighborhood partnerships, obviously. It was that office that sort of spearheaded this project, the President's Interfaith and Community Service Campus Challenge.
Just curious, is this the office that George Bush set up for interfaith initiatives, or do you have any idea?
Not sure about
that.
It rings a bell. I think you're right, but I can't tell you for sure.
Okay. And Interfaith Service Challenge is something brand new. And
right.
You mentioned this, if I heard you correctly, there are service-related programming that you have in mind, but also dialogue-related programming. Mm-hmm. Those are the two areas of emphasis. Is that right?
Yeah. This is the first year the challenge has been issued. And as you mentioned before, it's issued specifically to college campuses. U of I specifically, we've got a lot of different events planned. As Greg mentioned earlier, we're trying to focus on the issue of hunger and homelessness for service. We felt that that was kind of a unifying thing for all various faith or non-faith backgrounds that people agree, you know, hunger and homelessness is an issue, especially in the central Illinois area, which we thought was moderately appropriate for what we were doing. Examples of events that we have planned, a lot of working at different food banks in the organization. In November for Hunger and Homelessness Week, we have some food drives planned as well. So we've got a lot of different programming planned for that.
The Interfaith Service Challenge will be involved in this?
Absolutely, yeah.
And what is the connection to it being interfaith?
Hunger and homelessness specifically, right, or the events?
Let's just take that one example. How does interfaith service relate to hunger and homelessness?
Sure. A lot of different faiths actually do address the issue of hunger and homelessness specifically. A lot of them outline the value of, you know, helping those who aren't fortunate enough to have food to eat or aren't fortunate enough to have homes. Specifically right now, I'm of a Muslim background, and we're celebrating the holy month of Ramadan right now. And part of the month of Ramadan involves actually fasting from sunrise to sunset. There's a lot of reasons that people, Muslims fast. Part of it is because to understand that others don't have the luxury of having three meals a day, understanding the value of that. And in addition to Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism all put a value on helping those who don't have enough food to eat and making them.
Certainly within Christianity and Islam, there's a command to help the poor.
Mm-hmm.
So the interfaith connection is that if you bring people of different faiths in a service project, the intermingling of those people will do what? What's the benefit?
If I can jump in, the benefit is, in my opinion, relationships. So what we're doing here is we're looking at what we call shared values, for example, helping the hungry. And we're bringing people together from different backgrounds around that issue, around the shared value of helping others. And we're allowing that experience to create relationships. One of the things that we specifically hope to do on top of just doing service projects is to make it more of a service learning experience. We hope to integrate a conversation into the service that we do. And sometimes that looks like just more of an organic, informal conversation. Sometimes that looks like a formal dialogue that we deliberately will set up to talk about the reason why we're serving, what motivates us from our own faith or non-religious tradition to serve others.
I remember reading Dr. Patel saying what this does is reduce the strangeness of otherness.
Definitely. Yeah. One of the main goals of interfaith dialogue is to kind of humanize other faiths that people don't belong to, understand that that they can work towards a common cause without rifts being formed.
Didn't he spend a lot of time, I think it was in India, wasn't he, trying to didn't he run into, help me with my memory here, a young Muslim student, or was it a Christian that had trouble with understanding or communicating with someone from another faith? And he discovered that if you take them into the realm of the other, that his research, I assume this is what led to his sociological research, that antipathy and hostility and fear and insecurity are reduced, which is the general principle, right?
I don't know about that story in specific, but definitely that's a great example of how interfaith dialogue can help to promote understanding of other faiths and other individuals.
Maybe Dr. Patel will call in and
hopefully he's listening right now. Yeah.
Well, the call was put out in March. Mm-hmm. You have been planning and organizing since then?
Since March. Right. Yeah.
Who's involved?
Well, when the call came out, we drafted an email to the president of the University of Illinois, as well as the chancellor and the vice chancellor and several others we thought would be interested in getting behind the challenge.
There's a lot of
the former interim chancellor was at that time.
I hope the message carried to the new.
I sure hope so.
Right.
From there, we got connected with the vice chancellor for student affairs, mm-hmm. and we sat down in a meeting with representatives from several different offices and student organizations on campus. And we decided to put together this coalition that is now called the Illinois Interfaith Service Challenge. That involves, of note, the organization that Ish represents, which is Volunteer Illini Projects, which is one of our premier volunteer service organizations on campus,
right.
As well as an organization that I've been involved with for several years, which is Interfaith in Action, another student organization. It involves offices, the Office of Volunteer Programs, which is part of the Illini Union. Mm-hmm. It involves the Office of Inclusion and Intercultural Relations, which is sort of the diversity education office on campus, and several other organizations that there are too many to mention, of course.
Is there an administrative structure? Have you got officers or what?
The way that we look at it is that this is a student-run and staff-supported initiative. Mm-hmm. So we have sort of broken our committee into three main thrusts, one of them being service. That's what Ish mm-hmm. heads up.
That's my take.
We have an education committee that will focus on programs about religious literacy and interreligious dialogue. And then we have a communications committee, which is what I actually mm-hmm. head up. And that's where we're focused on how to get the message out about interfaith cooperation on our campus.
Mm-hmm. I understand it's not terribly specific what your program is going to be yet, but do you have any description you can give to the audience about what to expect? Let's take service.
Sure. In terms of service events that we have coming up, the first event, actually, we had this program called Service First, and that's for incoming freshmen. They have a chance to get used to campus, meet some upperclassmen, and do different volunteer projects across campus. And this year, for the first time, in response to the challenge, there is an option for students who want to have an interfaith dialogue in addition to the volunteer project they go on. So I think we're setting them up so they're going to be volunteering at a food bank, I believe. I believe it's Eastern Illinois Food Bank or Wesley Foundation, one of the two, I'm not sure. But after they go and volunteer there, they'll have a chance to discuss why they serve, which is kind of which relates to the big question we're asking students or people who respond to the challenge. Why do you serve? And how does faith play into that? And so that's one of the main events we have coming up. Other events, also for in November, we have Hunger and Homelessness this week, and we plan on having some food drives.
In November?
In November, yeah.
November, okay.
Hunger and Homelessness this week. Mm-hmm. We'll be having some food drives through students during that week as well.
Okay. And in the area of dialogue, what have you got going in your head?
Right
is
now.
It, is it more than just in your head, or is it?
It's a little more than just in our heads. Right now, we have a speaker series planned in partnership with the University YMCA. That will focus on issues of faith and service.
This is more than the Friday Forum. This is another.
This is beyond. This is actually a Tuesday night project, I believe.
Okay.
We'll also maybe some other events are more in our head, but we'll be holding dialogue sessions and panel discussions and mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that sort of thing, as well as a lot of these service events mm-hmm. that Ish mentioned. Will couple both the dialogue and reflection with the service. So there might be a short dialogue before the service project takes place or mm-hmm. after it takes place or maybe a conversation during the service itself.
Mm-hmm. Right. Ideally for all our service events, we'd have that interfaith dialogue because mm-hmm. that is the focus here of what we're trying to accomplish.
And do you have you sort of mapped out some objectives over the course of the first year that your targets that you're going to hopefully hit, ways to measure how successful you are, what you're thinking in that area?
Yeah, we've had long conversations about what the metrics will be for assessing this project. In fact, those metrics...
You've thought about it. If you can call these metrics, that's very corporate.
Well, it's one of those words that you learn along the way. You know?
Yeah, right. And you're supposed to be a pre-med. We'll have to talk about that in a minute. Go ahead.
We actually will require those metrics in a report that we'll give to the White House at the end of this year.
Oh, so the organization reports to the White House.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. So
do you go to the administration at all, the chancellor and
It will go through the university administration in some way. So the way this started following the call from President Obama and the challenge that was issued by the White House is we submitted a proposal to the White House along with over 200 other college campuses across the country. So then at the end of the year, we'll submit a report and we hope to sort of outshine those other campuses. We're not sure what sort of recognition would be in store if we can do that, but there is rumor of some sort of a...
Halos?
Halos maybe or maybe
we were hoping,
wings.
We were hoping full angel. Right?
So I'm not sure all the religions that might be involved believe in angels, but we'll see. So Ishmael, you went to Washington as a result of your involvement in this project. Mm-hmm. As I think earlier you said before the program that two people were sent there. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Sure. So on Wednesday, August 5th, I believe, is that what it was? I'm trying to remember, August 4th maybe. They kind of had a kickoff for every single college.
Oh, so this was just recent.
This was recent. Oh, yeah.
So you still have jet lag.
Just last Wednesday. Yeah, the entire hour. It's thrown me off. So what they did was, so the deadline for the proposals was, I think, in June. So the White House invited every single school that submitted a proposal to come to the White House, kind of have a convening, have a chance to network with each other and learn about what other schools are doing in response to the challenge. That was all last Wednesday. So myself and another student, Aditi Singh, who's involved with Interfaith in Action, had the opportunity to actually go to D.C. and meet with those other colleges and see what they were doing. So,
if you had to summarize the high points of your 200-page proposal, did you say?
No, there were 200
colleges. 200 campuses.
200 campuses. 200 colleges submitted
was these two thrust service-related opportunities for people of different faiths to work together on service issues, and the other would be dialogue. That was it? Or is there more that would distinguish you from the other proposals that you encountered?
Actually, when I was
Washington there
last Wednesday, I think a big thing that I noticed that distinguished us from a lot of the proposals was that the fact that Aditi and I were pretty much the only students there. It seems like a lot of other campuses, their responses are a lot more at an administrative level. So a lot of faculty are responding to it.
Interesting.
So it's a lot of – I met a lot of people who were, you know, director for faith-based programs or directors for service programs. And they were saying, okay, we're going to organize this and we're going to have students do it. I think – personally, I think it's an advantage we have, which is – I think it's really cool, is that a lot of students are direct – at U of I, our committee to respond to this is, as Greg mentioned, mainly student-structured with staff support. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, something I really noticed that I think is an advantage for our response.
Well, with some of these other proposals that you encountered, the 200-some-odd, they would have institutional support, right? Because they have paid staff members,
To an extent. I was speaking to some people, and some of them said, like, this is – basically just up to our office. So, I mean, I guess if their office has budgets, that would be an advantage in a sense. But, yeah.
Right. So that's a disadvantage because there's no money on this project, right?
Yeah.
Not yet anyway.
We do have bits of support from some of the campus offices that are involved. And that's what's going to help us put out these really great posters around campus and things like that to help get the word out about the challenge.
Right. Well, just so that our audience is up to speed here, we're talking to Greg Damhorst and Ishmael Umer about a new initiative that has come out of the White House. Last March, President Obama announced this initiative for college campuses across the country to focus on interfaith dialogue and service issues. And we're talking about the response here at the University of Illinois with Greg Damhorst and Ishmael Umer. If you'd like to call in to talk with Greg or Ishmael about this initiative, you can call in at 333-9455. There's also an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Well, tell us a little bit about your own religious backgrounds and how you this sense of how you see the world religiously led you to this kind of work. Ishmael, what is your affiliation?
I grew up in a Muslim family. And as I mentioned before, the interesting thing is that when I came to this committee, my main focus wasn't on interfaith dialogue. It quickly became that after meeting with Greg and seeing the great opportunities that interfaith dialogue has. But again, I came to it originally just playing and helping out with service. But as I learned about the challenge, I read some of the literature about it. I actually learned that the inherent value it had. I was in sixth grade when September 11th attacks happened in 2001.
Don't just get ready to ask you.
Yeah, I was in sixth grade. And I remember at first, I was sitting there in second period math in sixth grade, and this announcement came on and said,
You were in the States.
I was in the States, yep. I was born in the U.S., so okay. I've been here my entire life. Mm-hmm. I remember this announcement saying, there's been two planes that's crashed into the White House, crashed into the World Trade Center. And students, if you have relatives who are in New York or if you want to go see a counselor, you can do that. And I remember at first, it was just, being 11 years old, it was just really confusion. Didn't really know what was mm-hmm. going on. No one really had a clear idea of what was going on until they got home and they spoke to their parents. And I remember my parents sitting me down and they said, this is what's happened. They explained to me, about Al-Qaeda and Muslim terrorists. And they said, there are people who have taken our religion and they've kind of, in a sense, hijacked it. They've made it into their own warped version and they've messed it up. And that kind of scared me because I knew that the religion I followed promoted peace. It wasn't meant to do things like kill innocent people in such mass amounts. And I was worried that other people wouldn't see it that way. I was worried other people would think that, they're just going to equate Muslims and terrorists.
And rightly so.
Exactly. And I was really nervous about that. And, after the month happened and, fall happened, I think there was an incident where there was actually in Arizona, a Sikh man was attacked because someone thought that he was Arab or Middle Eastern. And, my mother actually wore the hijab, the Muslim head covering. And so I remember I was always nervous for her. I was like, I don't want you to wear that. I'm nervous about you wearing that out in public. I mean, if they would do that to a Sikh man, I mean, you're actually Muslim. I don't know what could happen to you. So when I got involved in this challenge, bringing it back to the main point, when I got involved in the challenge, I understood the value of understanding other faiths and realizing that what exactly each faith stands for and understanding how each faith has a humanizing aspect to it, that there are these offsets, there are these extremists that don't follow what everyone in that religion stands for, that they shouldn't be treated as representative of what the rest of people are doing. And I think through interfaith dialogue, it's a great way to do that so people can learn about other faiths and learn about how, in essence, what we all really want, just have a more peaceful world and a more understanding community.
Mm-hmm. Where your parents are immigrants?
Sure. My mother is from England, but heritage-wise, she's from India, and my dad is from India.
Mm-hmm.
So
would you be Sunni?
I am Sunni Muslim. Mm-hmm. That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Right after 9/11, there were a series of unreported attempts on the part of many in the Sunni tradition in particular to try to beat back the images that 9/11 would likely create about Muslims mm-hmm. and the Muslim world, but they were underreported. And it's interesting to hear that your parents' immediate reaction was, this is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably just really quite widespread, and most Americans even still today don't realize that mm-hmm. that fact.
Yeah.
And so one of the purposes, I assume, of this interfaith initiative is to try to get
definitely.
That through.
I mean, what you said about the beating it back would definitely resonate with me because, after it happened, my parents established to me that, I grew up in a Chicago suburb, Naperville, which is a pretty big community, but still, I was still the only
Muslim. Like a Chicago accent.
I was the only Muslim that a lot of people knew. My parents, told me that as one of the few Muslims your friends know, you're going to be a representative of this community. So it's important to you to uphold yourself. So my family was always big on,
getting involved in school, not making it seem like we were different, trying to establish that, you know, we were as American as possible. So she, my mother always made me, you know, get involved in clubs, do plays. That's what I did a lot in high school. My mom was always at the PTA, helping out with different home and school associations, you know, school fairs, open houses at the school and stuff like that. We always tried to be remain active in the community as much as possible.
Now, are you involved at CIMIC, Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic
School? I actually attend Friday prayer at the Union through the MSA. My schedule doesn't really usually work out, so I can attend the prayer on Fridays. But when I have a chance, I try and just stop by for Friday prayers.
They have, over the years, I'm sure you're probably aware. What year are you?
I'm going to be a senior.
Okay, so you've been here for at least 3.5, some odd years. They have engaged in numerous interfaith initiatives. Be interesting to get them involved in your project at some point. I'm sure you will.
Definitely. We really want to.
Greg, your religious background, and how did it draw you to this kind of work?
So I'm a Christian, and that didn't necessarily immediately lead me to this work. In fact, it was just a friend that I knew who invited me to participate. And, of course, coming from a religious background, I was interested in talking about my faith. What started to draw me into interfaith work and get me really committed to being a part of this sort of thing is the emphasis on service. It was actually something that I couldn't find enough of in my own faith community. And I found more opportunities to serve in interfaith work, which to me was what I was being called to do as a Christian. And of course, there are numerous places in the scriptures where service is emphasized, helping those who are in need in some way or another. So that's what, in a nutshell, got me really committed to interfaith work.
Now, you're a Protestant in the broad sense of the term. Which denomination, or do you have? Are you among the growing numbers of young Protestants who resist answering that question?
No, I don't have a problem answering that question. I grew up in the Evangelical Covenant Church, which is a small denomination. That was started by Swedish immigrants, I believe. I'm not Swedish, but somehow that was my home church. I don't necessarily identify that as being descriptive of my faith identity, but it is sort of the theology that I feel most comfortable in.
And you call it evangelical.
I call it evangelical, and I call myself an evangelical.
And by that you mean?
By that I mean
This bears on something I want to ask about interfaith dialogue a little later.
Of course. And an interesting question as well. What I mean by evangelical is that I see it important and, in fact, a central responsibility in my faith to tell others what I call the good news about who Jesus Christ is.
All right. Well, let me just take a minute before we go much further. Steve asked me to make an announcement related to the University YMCA. The University Y is collecting for a huge dump and run sale, which is one of their biggest events annually. You can give items of furniture, household goods, CDs, books, clothes at the U of I Stock Pavilion at 1402 West Pennsylvania Avenue. This will take place between August 10th through the 13th. If you're interested in more details about the University Y Dump and Run Sale, call the Y for details. Their number is 337-1500. Again, the sale will be from August 20th and 21st, and you can bring your items between August 10th and 13th if you would like to donate those. All right. Well, let me mention a distinction that I came across in my own reading about interfaith dialogue between direct and indirect dialogue. Some have suggested that direct dialogue between faith traditions that tend to be universalist and exclusivist in their thinking usually leads to unpleasantness, disagreement, conflict. And so the indirect approach, where you talk about what your faiths have in common, usually takes you to things like what you all are now talking about. And I think Dr. Patel has, and that is service, helping the poor, social justice issues, and related concerns. Is it your idea that by taking this approach, you will indirectly get to a point where the sense of otherness will break down and therefore the unpleasantness and disagreements that result when we contrast and compare our beliefs and start getting angry with each other won't happen? Is that in your thinking?
Exactly. In fact, I can answer with a completely confident yes that I think that's where this sort of dialogue can lead us. I've been doing interfaith work, as I call it, for 5 years, maybe a little less, but almost 5 years now.
Here or at home?
Here on campus at
Just
the University
here.
Of Illinois.
Okay.
And in other places as well. I've worked with the Interfaith Youth Corps on various occasions in different places. In fact, I was just in Washington, D.C. Two or three weeks ago for another event around interfaith cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
What we've done through this interfaith cooperation, through this dialogue, is we've set up relationships where we can talk about even these touchy issues in a positive way and in a way that doesn't lead to sort of the angered conflict that mm-hmm. those discussions often can. Most notably, I can think of a couple non-religious, atheist, secular humanist individuals who are good friends of mine. And as an evangelical Christian, naturally you would expect those two identities to clash quite blatantly. But because we've built those relationships, starting with a conversation about serving others
mm-hmm.
And a dialogue around shared values, we're able to acknowledge that our faiths are different and even acknowledge the fact that as an evangelical, I'm interested in introducing my non-religious friends to who I believe God is. We can have that conversation in a positive way.
Why is it important to you to introduce them?
In my faith tradition, there's a call that I refer to as the Great Commission, which is
to become fishers of men.
In the New Testament, Jesus's call to make disciples of all nations, mm-hmm. to be fishers of men, to bring others to know Him, and that's central to my faith tradition. But it doesn't necessarily mean I'm not compatible with interfaith cooperation.
Mm-hmm. And Ishmael, there's I don't know how much you know of history of Islam, but some very serious misconceptions about, I don't think the word evangelical is appropriate, but proselytizing,
yes.
forced, coerced mm-hmm. conversions over the history of Islam, when in fact there are glorious periods in Islam's history. And even a golden age of tolerance and acceptance
sure.
of faiths across cultures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, speaking historically, Islam has been one of the most tolerant religions in terms of history. When the Islamic Empire was at its peak, when it spread out to over Spain, I know that specific cities that it actually held, it allowed those cities to maintain their original Catholic or Christian traditions. Also, when the Prophet Muhammad originally, when he moved back to his home city of Mecca, and when he retook it, I think this is 580 or so, the original residents of Mecca were terrified that the Prophet and his followers were just going to either slaughter all of them if they didn't convert. And he said, no, you know, I just want to unite the cities. If you want to follow our faith, that's fine. And if not, then you're free to practice your religion as you
but
will.
But he did smash the idols.
He did smash the idols. That was actually not Prophet Muhammad. That was actually Abu Bakr. Mm-hmm. That was his father, or that was his guardian. And that was earlier. But generally speaking, Islam has been very tolerant of most religions in terms of no matter even whether or not they're mm-hmm. ruling the cities or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk to us a little bit about how you and your parents, or just you, see Islam in the world. Greg has just described how he approaches secularist, atheist friends of his, and who else was it that you said you engaged with? Do you see them as the stereotype out there in the media is infidels? Obviously not. When you, no doubt, you have many friends who are of other faiths
Definitely.
And no faiths at all.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see them and think about them?
How do I see
when you talk about religion?
Sure. I think what you said earlier about breaking down that other is something that's really important to me when I have these conversations about faith. I think I don't want to single out the media for this, but I think after in the past few years, Muslims and terrorists have both been associated as that other group. You know, it's kind of us against them, the U.S. against the forces of evil. And sometimes Muslims seem to fall into that category just by implicit association.
The evil ones.
The evil ones, exactly. So when I have these conversations about faith with friends, I try and really make it out to be that, you know, we're really the same as you. I try to focus a lot on the commonalities that we have. We have the same concerns, the same issues. Oftentimes, I mean, friends especially who follow the Abrahamic religions, Judaism and Christianity, I mean, just emphasizing that, you know, how similar our three religions really are. I mean, but you know, extending beyond that, whether it's friends who are not of a faith background or whether it's friends of a non-faith background or Hinduism or a different religion, really just emphasizing, you know, I'm Muslim, but that doesn't mean I'm a terrorist. You know, I mean, I have a lot of the same interests as you. I've seen a lot of concerns as you. As I mentioned, you know, my mom tried to emphasize that with us at a young age too, trying to get us involved in different community engagements, establishing that we just want to live in American society normally and just enjoy our life here as well.
Greg, I'm just actually both of you. Are you by any chance acquainted with a document called the Dialogue Decalogue? 10 Commandments for Interfaith Dialogue. Have you ever come across that?
No, I haven't.
It's an interesting piece. The first commandment is the primary purpose of dialogue is to learn, that is to change and grow in perception and understanding of reality, and then to act. Focus is on listening rather than preaching and telling. Mm-hmm. Just take that one. When you are having a conversation with an atheist, to what extent are you listening? And what is the intent behind your desire to evangelize? How do you think about that? Because there's so much distrust out there. Well, here's Greg. He wants to tell me about Jesus and evangelize. He wants to hook me. So there's a fear that something is going on there. That kind of distrust is so deep and prevalent and widespread that it's kind of like something toxic whenever you get to dialogue situations. So how do you deal with that?
Sure. Let me tell you a quick story.
You've been doing it for 5 years. You should know.
Let me tell you a quick story to illustrate my perspective on this. I have a friend named Chelsea who is a student at Harvard University, and she identifies as an atheist. She is also very active on her campus in getting other students to sign up to be bone marrow donors. And she once told me how she can be so frustrated with people who, when she's standing there on the quad or wherever on her campus, trying to promote bone marrow donor registrations, how people can just walk by and not care,
right,
or not be interested. Because what she tells me is that if she knows, as someone who understands the importance of a bone marrow donation, she believes that if anyone else could understand what she knows about it, they could not say no to becoming a bone marrow donor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this reflects in some way how I feel about my own faith, that if someone could understand what I know about Jesus Christ, that they couldn't refuse. Now, of course, there are people who will disagree with me about that, and I think there's something more spiritual to it than just this simple analogy, but you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So what it becomes for me as an evangelical, and I've spent some time trying to look at how people are doing this evangelism thing around the country and around the world. What it comes down to for me is if I'm called to communicate the message of my faith, how am I going to best communicate it?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at some of the examples out there, obviously there are some very ineffective methods. Something that comes to mind is the recent Herald camping, the world is going to end on March or May, May 6th or something like that. And obviously there was some theological problems with that, but
well, but he's adjusting those.
He's adjusting.
Yeah, he actually made some new predictions.
It's now October, isn't it?
Right. I think that's what he said, yeah.
But anyway, they spent thousands of dollars to put up billboards saying, repent because God is coming back and you're going to go to hell if you don't. To me, that's not communicating the compassion of Jesus Christ. It's not communicating what I know about my faith that leads me to call myself a follower of Christ. Mm-hmm. When I look at the life of Christ in the New Testament, what I notice among many things is that the way that Jesus communicates the message of the gospel, as he calls it, is through relationships with people, through telling stories, parables, for example, and through serving others. Mm-hmm. So what I find when I do interfaith work is that I come to the table to do service, to tell stories about my faith, mm-hmm. and to have relationships with people who are different from me. So I'm convinced that that's the most effective way for me to communicate the message of my faith to others.
In a dialogue situation.
Now, to show up with a level playing field where I'm just one faith in sort of a sea of many others is okay with me because I think, of course, as a Christian, I believe that my faith has the truth. And so I think that's something that distinguishes it.
Do you believe that there are other truths in other faiths?
As a Christian, I don't. Mm-hmm. I believe, let me clarify that by saying my understanding of Jesus Christ as being the only way to God is what I believe other faiths have wrong. I think there are beautiful and inspiring things in other faith traditions, mm-hmm. and I think those are important to recognize when one is building a relationship with somebody from a different faith tradition. For example, the call to serve others that Ish was talking about in Islam. Mm-hmm. This is an example of many others, but those are things that I can resonate with that are inspiring to me, although there are theological differences that I still recognize.
Mm-hmm. Just one last time here, if you're interested in getting involved in this conversation, we're talking about interfaith service challenge is the name of the initiative that was launched in March of this year at the White House by President Obama. And we have two guests on the program who are here to talk to us about this initiative on the U of I campus, Mr. Greg Damhorst and Ishmael Umer, about their initiatives to develop greater understanding between religious traditions on the University of Illinois campus and throughout the community. And if you'd like to get into this conversation and talk with our guests, you can call 333-9455. You can also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Isn't it the case that if you engage in indirect dialogue, you don't ask the question that I just asked about do you believe that Christianity or your understanding of Christianity is the only truth? Don't you put that on the shelf and engage with others at a different level of existence, of relationships?
Speaking from my experience, I don't think that I have to put anything on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we do is we set up a safe space for having these dialogues where others can acknowledge that I believe something that excludes their theology from what I would call truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. In fact, if I were asked to hang up some part of my belief in my theology when I came to the table, I wouldn't be doing this.
Mm-hmm. So you don't shy away from direct dialogue about beliefs?
Not at all. And it's interesting because this interfaith or interreligious or interbackground dialogue to be more inclusive of the non-religious in that statement. It's sort of a learned skill, I think, and that's part of our goal with the Interfaith Service Challenge on campus is to develop these skills in students on our campus to be able to have the tools and the language for having dialogues,
civil discourse about
exactly
religion,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and of course it starts with a shared value with something in common, but it doesn't shy away from differences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I think an important thing about interfaith dialogue is that, like, while we do like to emphasize, like, you know, a lot of our similarities, it's not like we discount the differences because the differences are what make us individual and what makes the strength of interfaith dialogue. We all have different strengths based on our different faiths and our different backgrounds, and we certainly don't try to discount those. I think the strength is that people are open to discuss their differences and not feel like they're going to be attacked for it or not feel like they're going to be excluded for it.
Mm-hmm. Some people involved in interfaith dialogue do it with the general idea that all religions are a part of one larger community and that God has many faces, but there's only one God. So the truth is distributed widely across religions, and you just essentially objected or denied that. But many see it that way, and the purpose of that way of thinking is to try to get us to our commonalities. The notion of interfaith dialogue is to find out what we have in common and avoid the nasty differences underneath. But you're saying that that's not a good idea, that we should celebrate our differences, go there, and try to understand them.
Exactly. I mean, personally, I would say, ignoring our differences just leads to seeds of discontent later. I mean, we have our differences. There's no point in avoiding them.
Either one of you encountered breakdowns in dialogue, conflict that led to unpleasantness? And what were those like? And what did you learn from them? And how do you deal with that?
To be honest, I can't recall a time that I have. Mm-hmm. And what I think that speaks to, because I've had many of these dialogues over the past 5 years, I think what that speaks to is that the model for interfaith dialogue that we use is very effective. Mm-hmm. And that this comes back to Eboo Patel and the Interfaith Youth Corps.
Right.
Because that organization has developed this model for interfaith dialogue.
Why don't you describe the model?
Sure. So it's really a very simple concept, but we always enter into a discussion by discussing what we would call a safe space. You've already heard me use these words. And what that is a conversation about what is it that everyone here at the table needs in order to feel comfortable talking about their faith. Mm-hmm. And so that includes things like, being willing to listen to someone else, speaking in terms of what I believe instead of saying what you believe or what they believe or something like that, really speaking for oneself and this sort
of
thing.
Or what is the truth?
Or what is the truth? Mm. And I can say, and there's a very perhaps subtle but important distinction between saying, I believe that the truth is this, and saying
this is the
truth is this, right? So that's where some of these skills come into play. And so then what we do is we enter into dialogue by talking about shared values. If we can find a way to inspire one another, we've gained a whole lot of ground in building relationships. And we don't have to ignore our differences to inspire each other. But sometimes we need to start there so that we can lay a groundwork for having a positive relationship where differences can be on the table.
We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Your question or comment, please.
Yes. First of all, I'm of a more liberal faith, and I don't believe that Jesus is the only way to God. I'm in a mainline Christian church. I would have liked it if there had been somebody on there representing that. I feel like more questions should be asked from the Islamic person, and I came in late on this. Sorry, I don't know what his name is. That
Ishmael Umar.
Hi.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Thank you. Hi. That do you feel that your faith is the only truth?
Well, thank you for that question. I was just getting ready to ask it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The interpretation I have probably isn't going to be shared with other Muslims. Personally, I think there are multiple ways to God. I know that Islam doesn't necessarily agree. Some Muslims might not agree with that. But Islam essentially states that the religions of Christianity, the religions of Judaism, all religions at one point in time had a prophet that was leading them all the way up to Islam eventually. Islam was eventually the final religion, and Muhammad was the final prophet. However, the thing is that we feel that these original religions have changed over time through different additions, through different variations. The original message has gotten lost. But Islam states that if you lead essentially a good life, if you follow the tenets of whatever religion you have, you strive for a good life, that's definitely not going to bar you from entering heaven or entering Jannah is what we call heaven. As long as you lead a good life and you have a pure soul, there's no reason to suggest that you're not going to get to God.
And what is there about that that you say most Muslims would not agree with?
Some Muslims do think that Islam is the only righteous path. But I mean, there are. This is, again, it depends on your interpretation. I'm of the school of thought that if you try and lead as much of a sin-free life as possible and try and commit as many good deeds as you can on your time here, you will find your path to God.
Mm-hmm. What are the most successful moments, effective moments, moving or inspiring moments that you all have had in interfaith dialogue in the past? And are you hoping to replicate these in some way in your work?
I actually have a letter sitting in front of me that was written, apparently, by the President of the United States.
Well, I see it has his name.
It's got a signature on it. So.
Yeah, now I've heard things about auto pens and that sort of thing, so I don't know who signed it.
I have three.
Wow.
Wow. Printed letters.
This is a letter that is written to college presidents around the country. This came out April 26th, shortly after the president's Interfaith and Community Service Canvas Challenge was announced. And this is a letter to the college president encouraging them to have their campus participate in this challenge. The reason I brought this is because in the third paragraph of this letter, it gives some examples of how great interfaith cooperation is happening around the country. And one of those specific examples mentions the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, where students from several different faith communities came together with the Salvation Army from our community to help earthquake victims in Haiti. And so what this is referring to is an event we had just over a year ago called 1 Million Meals for Haiti, which was organized by the Salvation Army in town, but was a project that was started by Interfaith in Action, a student organization on campus, and we came in as a partner with the Salvation Army in organizing that. And we can see how people from different faith communities in Champaign-Urbana, both students and community members, came together to help in a time where there was a lot of need in Haiti. Not to say that there's not a lot of need now, but at that time, emergency food resources was an important need. This to me is what's inspiring, that we can actually accomplish something tangible and significant when we decide to work together in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And some people participating in that might not have thought about the fact that, oh, this is interfaith cooperation. They might have just thought there's people in Haiti who need help, and I'm going to do what I can to help them, even if it means working alongside someone who has a very different theological perspective.
Now, are you going to track your experiences, your dialogue events and service projects so that you can summarize them as the greatest of all the 200 a year from now when you send the report back in? How is that going
to
work?
We hope so. This gets back to those metrics we were talking about.
How to evaluate it. Yeah.
We will hopefully have some very measurable metrics, like how many meals we package or how many mm-hmm. how many
volunteers,
you know,
we get out,
pounds of food we, you know, or how much money we raise or whatever our projects will look like. We'll also hope to be able to say this many students engaged in a dialogue around faith and values on campus who may not have had that experience otherwise, or this many students have been trained in how to lead those dialogues.
Exactly.
We'll have those sorts of metrics as well, and we will summarize those as we go on our website, which is www.illinoisinterfaithservice.org. I have neglected to mention that up to this point, but
excuse me.
But that website.
Say that again, one more time.
Illinoisinterfaithservice.org. That will both have announcements about how people both on campus and in the community can be involved, a list of our events and that sort of thing. It'll also contain updates with these metrics that we've been talking about to sort of track how the initiative is progressing.
Are you open to people from the community offering suggestions for
Absolutely.
Programming and dialogue
Absolutely.
Setup?
Absolutely.
I think that's an important concept of the metrics we're going to have is getting feedback both from the community and both from students who attend our programs, trying to get them say, you know, this is what I really liked about this program. This is what I think needs to be added. And we're going to have surveys available for that on IllinoisInterfaithService.org.
Yeah, having been myself involved in some of these in our local community in the past, you might want to be prepared for some world atrocity that creates tension and having to use that as a teachable moment. I remember the invasion of Israel's invasion of Lebanon some years ago led to even a breakdown in dialogue for some folks that had a good one going. Being prepared for those moments to use them and getting out in front is a good thing to do.
Sure. Yeah.
How is it that people can get involved in this? I don't know how many students are going to be listening, so we can talk about students, but also community members. Do you have an office? They can contact you, obviously, on the website. But
Everything will go through our website, IllinoisInterfaithService.org. We have a Twitter account. We have a Facebook page, so you can like us and follow us and whatever your thing is
tweet
there. We'll have many ways for people from all corners of campus and the community to get involved as well. Mm-hmm. One of them is to just participate in some of the projects that we'll organize. We'll actually have a place on our website that's specifically for ways to get involved, and there will be several different ways people can do that. In fact, we've set up the challenge in a way such that other organizations can organize an event that includes interfaith dialogue and service and can actually get it certified as an Illinois Interfaith Service Challenge event. We'll also have a way where people can just sort of sign on to the challenge and recognize as an individual or as an organization that this is an important thing to be involved with.
Just by going to the website?
Going to the website and filling out a form. And so that form might not be up yet because we're actually going live today for the first time with this website. But it'll be up there soon.
Boy, you really are starting up brand new.
Very brand new. So we've done a lot of planning, but this is the nationwide challenge was launched on Wednesday, and the local challenge here is being launched today in some sense.
Mm-hmm. We're looking at all levels of commitment, whether you just want to come to a speaker series or whether you are a community organizer and you have volunteer opportunities that might not even be within the hunger and homelessness ratio. We're welcome to any type of involvement from the community.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming to our program today. We've been talking to Greg Damhorst, and am I saying that right, Damhorst?
Yeah, that's right.
And Ishmael Umer.
You're saying that right.
Who are both representing a new initiative here in the University of Illinois campus that came out of Washington, D.C., with a challenge by President Obama entitled Interfaith Service Challenge. Thank you guys very much for being on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We could go on for another hour.
I'm sure we can.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Keeping the Faith. Steve will be back next week. Thank you for being with us and see you again next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
I'm David Thiel from WILL-TV. Join me this October for a Friends of WILL tour of London, Yorkshire, and Wales. We'll see stately homes and splendid scenery with connections to some of our most popular TV programs. Three-night stays in each of our locales offer us plenty of free time. Call us at 217-333-7300 or visit will.illinois.edu for more information.
This is Illinois Public Media.